Set 7 years after the world has become a frozen wasteland, Snowpiercer centres on the remnants of humanity who inhabit a gigantic, perpetually moving train that circles the globe. Class warfare, social injustice and the politics of survival are questioned in this television adaptation coming to novel. The series is based on the acclaimed movie of the same name, which was directed by Bong Joon-ho. Arlene Hunt has been watching Snowpiercer and she joins me now. Even if you put them all on the 1001 carriages, I believe, on this train, Arlene, class is going to be at the very centre of it. You want to be up the front of the train, you don't want to be down the back of the train.
I think it was Paris Hilton who once said she'd never turn right on an airplane. Well, it's a little bit like this. It's 101 carriages long. It was unleashed just as the whole of the earth had dropped to 117 degrees below freezing. And Mr. Wilford, who's actually an unseen character throughout the series, he unleashes Snowpiercer. And as you said, it's a perpetually in motion train with 3,000 people on board. But not everybody who is on board was invited to be on board. So at the tail end of this train, at the very last carriage, you have a lot of people who sort of broke into the train just before it left the station and before it became before it started out on its major journey doing revolutions of the world.
And they're called the tailies. Up the front, it's a totally different, if you turn left when you get onto the train, it's a totally different scenario.
Yeah, so you've got the very, very uber wealthy who are living at the front end of the train. They are the sort of the movers and shakers of the world, the people who could afford to live in the lap of luxury for as long as they need to live in the lap of luxury. And then as the carriages move down, you move down to the various different classes. And what we meet is the tailies, but we also is in the first episode, there's something going on in third class carriages, which are in the centre of the train. And the story erupts really from there.
Well, let's get a sense of how it erupts. Melanie is one of the officers on the train, played by Jennifer Connelly, and she wants to recruit Andre, played by David Diggs. He's a tailie down at the very back end of the train, and she has a problem in the third class areas. And you'll also in this clip hear the voice of Roach, played by Mike O'Malley.
Detective, I'm here to tell you personally that Mr. Wilford wants this solved quickly. Doors will open wherever your investigation leads you.
Oh, shit.
2 years ago, there was another victim. Male, genitals removed.
Someone's already serving time in the drawers for it.
So, either you got a copycat, or Mr. Wilford put the wrong person in the drawers. I'll do it for rations and third-class immigration for the tail.
You're not entitled to anything here. The passengers had tickets. All the crew had jobs. You tailies boarded the train.
Lee Brakeman,
like
please! Would you uncuff him? Please. This must be very disconcerting to you. Really, it's simple. You are the only homicide detective on the train. And so, Mr. Wilford is asking you to contribute.
I'd guess when Mr. Wilford asks you to do something, he really is an offer you can't refuse.
I was just about the same thing. You'd expect to wake up with a horse's head in your bed if you didn't go along with it.
Yeah, that was a clip from Snowpiercer, the new Netflix series. Jennifer Connelly playing Melanie, David Diggs playing Andre, who is very usefully the only detective on board the train. And as I said, the voice of Michael O'Malley within that as well. Arlene Hunt has been looking at the series for us. It's a pretty crude setup. And, you know, I only watched the first episode now, Arlene, but I got a real sense of, you know, it's the poor people down the back, the very rich people up the front. And there's not a lot of subtlety in that portrayal. Or were they just laying things out in episode one?
Yeah, I think that because it's episode one, they sort of put everything in the kitchen sink into it to give you an idea of what's going on and the dynamics between the different carriages and the different groups. If you've watched the original film in 2013, you know, it does differ from that, because this is much more, we didn't have like a police detective in the first film. It was very much a film about, you know, it was class warfare, where the people in the back of the train fought their way to get to the front of the train and get control of the engine, and in doing so get control of the train. Whereas this is very different. This is, has different layers and different things going on. There's obviously a lot more different characters because it's over 10 episodes. So there's a huge amount of exposition in the first episode. That being said, there's a lot of interesting characters that have been introduced. I particularly like Commander Gray, which is played by Timothy V. Murphy, which everyone sort of would probably know from the various different things he's been in over the years. But he seems to be having the time of his life playing this sort of jack-booted like thug who's in charge of things. And, you know, Alison Wright is in it. A lot of people would know her from The Americans. And she plays what she was probably playing the original Tilda Swinton role. So she's, you know, these women, these are all like Jennifer Connelly's character. These are all what they're called, the head of hospitality. Now, you heard Jennifer Connelly there. Does she sound very hospitable to you?
No, not really. The other thing that I think, and I'm wondering, is this an addition in the series or was this there in the original film? The guards, a lot of the crew on the train are wearing uniforms that are unmistakably modelled on Nazi uniforms from the Second World War. And the tailies down the back of the train, the kind of situation they are in, terribly reminiscent of the sort of trains that brought people to concentration camps. Is there any serious political point being made around that type of thing, do you think?
I think so, because, you know, they're basically refugees on this train. If you look at it, no matter what way you look at it, they're refugees. They are unwanted. They are the unwanted on the train. They don't belong there compared to what, that's what everyone else considers them. At one point, they're told they're basically just the dregs of society that manage to get on board. And when things do go wrong up along the train, you know, it's the tailies who suffer. You know, their rations are halved, their electricity is cut. You know, the punishments that are meted out to the people in the tailie end of things when things go wrong, or anyone tries any kind of uprising, is pretty horrific. And you'll see that from the first episode on. You'll see there's many of them have lost an arm, and it's a very, very, very harsh punishment how they lose their arm. So I don't want to give it away because it's actually quite shocking to see on the screen. But there's a lot of political shenanigans going on as the series goes forward, and a lot of diving deeper into what it means to be stuck on something for 6 years, because this train is now running into its seventh year. So what they initially would have thought, people thought they'd be on the train for X amount of period of time, and then the world somehow would return to what it should have been before. And it hasn't. And actually, it's becoming more and more difficult on the train, because as they go along, you know, the earth itself is falling apart. There's a lot of, like, when they go through various sections of very rough terrain, there's landslides and avalanches, and things are not as they seem.
And also, obviously, we have the climate change as part of that story. I mentioned the political aspect within the references to World War II. But there's also this idea of the haves and the have-nots. Is that social debate explored with any subtlety?
Subtlety, I don't know if I'd say it was subtle, because the haves are the uber haves. And it's very difficult to create subtlety around people who, you know, who are very upset over the fact that they can't have smoked salmon in the morning, whereas people in the tailies are worried about losing their arm and losing their children. So, you know, there is no sort of conflation between the two worlds, except that as people move up to the trains and move up to the different carriages and move up to the different, you know, third class, fourth class, you can see how people change in the television show as well. And how you can actually see the sort of degeneration of people as they reach closer to the engine.
I don't know how many episodes you've watched, Arlene. Will you be seeing it out to the end? I think it's a 10-part series, isn't it?
Yes, I think I will, because it's a little bit of a slow starter. I won't lie, it's a little bit higgly-piggly at the start, but it revs up very nicely after episode 3. That I will tell you. Episode 3 is terrific. That's absolutely terrific. It's really interesting, and it genuinely sort of picks up the pace very quickly then.
So you will be going back and watching it through to the
end to
check it out. Well, I have to tell you that a neighbour of mine said he stuck with it and then he gave up just before the end. So I'd be interested to see if that happens to you as well. That's Arlene Hunt.
I'll let you know.
Yeah, do so. That's Arlene Hunt speaking to us about Snowpiercer, which starts on Netflix on May the 25th. And that is our lot for this evening here on Arena.